We are in Zechariah 11, the last three verses, 15 through 17. And what we've seen is, again, and we've got to decide as we go through this, it doesn't make it explicitly clear, but those first chapter 11, the first three verses, 1 through 3, something is coming down. The Lord is coming down from the north through Lebanon. The trees are falling. Could that be Rome approaching and the destruction is going to come after Jesus Christ, after the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus? That would be the setting up of 70 AD or 66 to 70 AD. Then verses 4 up to verse 14, we've got the Good Shepherd, the faithful shepherd. Zechariah is to take, again, we don't know where this is in time. It doesn't tell us where it's at in time. The biggest clue we would have would be the sequence of events, but also describing this first shepherd in verses 4 through 14. It's quoted a couple times, is quoted and aligned with Jesus' ministry, that Jesus is fulfilling the verses 4 through 14 as being the good shepherd is coming to Israel. But again, Zechariah is prophesying or writing in, you know, 518 in this area. And so you've got to kind of consider, what is he talking about, things pertaining in his time period, or is he looking down this past Alexander now into Rome, into the ministry of Jesus Christ? And as we come into verses 15 through 17, we're going to have, it's described as the foolish shepherd and the worthless shepherd. Both are important words. And again, we'll give you several ideas on this. Is this just general bad leadership? Again, they're talking about shepherds, but not really shepherds. They're not talking about sheep and shepherds. The sheep represent the people, and the shepherds represent the leaders. And in this particular case, the sheep are Israel, the nation of Israel. And the good shepherd is going to come, and he's going to be rejected. He's going to try to remove and will remove the poor workers that he's got with him. He's got some poor shepherds working with him. He'll have them removed. He'll bring favor and union to the sheep. Favor would be favor from God, in a sense, a covenant that God's working on their behalf. And also bring union, which would be probably unity amongst the brothers, amongst the sheep. He's going to set the stage. They've got fellowship with God. They've got fellowship with each other. But then they turn on him. They detest the good shepherd. They don't want him. And as their behavior shows, the good shepherd doesn't want them. It's fine, you don't want me. I'll abandon you to your own ways. Let those who are dying die. Let those who are going to be destroyed be destroyed. And let the rest of them eat each other. And he says, you know, pay me my wages, whatever you want to pay me. Or if not, don't pay me. And they threw him 30 pieces of silver, which was, again, not much money. It's almost like a mockery. And several of these verses are quoted, as we know, in the New Testament. And he ends up breaking the staff of favor, that they've got favor with God. That's broken. That's lost. And union with each other, that's broken. And he walks away. And God had told Zechariah to play the part of this good shepherd. He was supposed to, again, we don't know specifically, was he supposed to speak this sermon, you know, talk about this metaphor? Was he actually supposed to? It really appears he goes off and gets hired and acts the part of a good shepherd, actually engages in business watching someone else's sheep. But nonetheless, it's prophetic, talking about someday in the future. And it's hard not to see this being Jesus, which I think is a huge clue as for the timing of this prophecy. This is, again, I don't want to say absolutely because it doesn't say it in the text, but yet the New Testament writers quote it. I mean, you've got the 30 pieces of silver. You've got Jesus referring himself as the good shepherd. There's a couple times where the sheep are left to themselves or they have no shepherd. So this seems to be fulfilled in 30 A.D. or, you know, during Jesus' ministry, which would be the forerunner of the events that lead to these verses of Rome marching in, destroying everything, coming down. And once this shepherd is rejected, Zechariah is told by God tonight, and I'll read those verses now. Chapter 11, beginning in verse 15, Then the Lord, and then it's all capitalized, you can see Yahweh. Then Yahweh said to me, Zechariah, take again, that's an important word, again, the equipment of a foolish shepherd. For I'm going to raise up a shepherd over the land. Again, he's going to raise up a shepherd. Since they've rejected his good shepherd, and the good shepherd said, okay, you don't want me? Then just pay me my wages and I'll be on my own, and you're left to yourself. God says, since they did that to my good shepherd, I'm going to give them a shepherd that they desire, a shepherd that they want, a shepherd they deserve. I will raise up for them a foolish shepherd, a shepherd over the land who will not care for the lost or seek the young, we'll talk about this, or heal the injured or feed the healthy. Notice there's 1, 2, 3, 4 types of sheep that the false shepherd, the foolish shepherd, is not going to help. And then there's two actions that follow. But will eat the meat of the choice sheep. Again, these are not his sheep. He's watching them for the master. He's working for somebody. Will eat the meat of the choice sheep, and second, tearing off their hooves. So there's going to be four types of sheep he does not help, and then he will, number five, eat the sheep, but then do this other thing, number six, tearing off their hooves. And we'll talk about what could that refer to. And then finally, because that's the case, God is going to now judge. He judged the people by giving them this false shepherd, this foolish, worthless shepherd. Now, because the foolish, worthless shepherd behaved like that, he's now going to judge the worthless shepherd. So woe to the worthless shepherd who deserts the flock. And here's this punishment. Again, there you see the worthless shepherd, not just 1, 2, 3, 4 types of sheep he did not take care of, but then number 5 ate the sheep, number 6 tore off their hooves, and now we see number 7, he ends up deserting the flock, going over and abandoning them to their, you know, their enemies. May the sword strike his arm, and this is all metaphors, and his right eye. May his arm be completely withered or paralyzed, his right eye totally blinded. And so that is the three verses that we're looking at tonight. I am going to put this right now in this sequence. If the good shepherd is talking about Jesus in 30 AD, we could very easily see verses 1 through 3 being Rome's invasion, 66 to 70 AD, and the foolish shepherd or the worthless shepherd that God is going to raise up being the Antichrist, which is in the future. Now, this can have, in a sense, two fulfillments. I'll give you a list of some options. But in 133, I should say 132, Jesus even said, he said this, he says, when I leave, false Christs will arise. False prophets and false Christs, false messiahs will rise up. And Bar Kokhba, again, I'm spelling that wrong, it's in your notes correctly, he rose up and was recognized. He put himself forward as a military leader. Many people did. There's like 3 or 4 messiahs in 66 AD that rose up, each with a different political party. And the Jews actually started fighting against each other, as we talked about, in 66, 67 AD. In 70 AD, as Rome is trying to break through the different walls, the layers of walls to get into the city, the Jews were fighting each other. Well, that's exactly what was said. The staff of union will be broken. The staff of favor is broken, where God abandons them. They no longer have favor or grace from God. You're on your own. But they have each other. Well, Jesus, or the shepherd, was told, break the staff of union. And again, 69, 70 AD, the Jews started fighting each other. They even rose up different messiahs. And those are what Jesus talked about. But particularly in 132, Bar Kokhba arose, a military leader, was recognized by the rabbis. One particular rabbi recognized him as the Messiah. And he leads the Jews in a second revolt against Rome, which is finally put down in 135 against Emperor Hadrian and the Romans. He leads them, and that's called the Bar Kokhba revolt. They actually took over the Temple Mount, and they minted coins with the dates, you know, the first year of the independence, the second year. It's like the American Revolution that didn't get past 1777 or 1779. I mean, 1776, 1777. And by 1779, the mints are all taken over. Benjamin Franklin's hanging somewhere. Thomas Jefferson's, you know, executed. Well, that's what happened to the Bar Kokba revolt. They thought they were going to start minting coins, and they did, and start the nation, but Rome crushed it. And then they plowed Jerusalem, and the Jews at that point could come back, but they came back and started a second revolt. And at that time, Hadrian renamed Jerusalem Alea Capitolia. It completely paganized it. No longer are the Jews even allowed. It was centuries before the Jews got back. And so Bar Kokhba could be that foolish, worthless shepherd that comes after Jesus. There could be these false shepherds in the Roman revolt of 60, Jewish wars of 66 to 70. It could be Bar Kokhba, 132 to 135. But I think it's the Antichrist who is going to come, yet that we're, these would be like little Antichrist or little fulfillments. That's the greater fulfillment. So again, if I look at chapter 11, I think it's talking about, in the middle verses, the good shepherd Jesus being rejected. Because he was rejected, Rome comes in, marches down, destroys the land, and God is going to replace the good shepherd with a worthless shepherd, which is ultimately going to be the Antichrist, although you saw some fulfillment in 66 to 70 A.D., some fulfillment in 132 to 135 A.D. The Antichrist is yet to come. And you can decide that, and what you think those are referring to. But here we go. We look at the notes. On the notes, we've got the English Standard Version. And chapter at the top of page 1, chapter 11, verse 15. Then the Lord said to me, take once more the equipment of a foolish shepherd. And this idea of saying once more, or some translations, again, means this is the second time he's going to take equipment, the equipment of a shepherd. And the first time would be in chapter 11, verse 4. It says, this is what the Lord my God says, pasture the flock marked for slaughter, and tells him several places to take the, or to pasture, become the shepherd, the good shepherd. And that we're going to assume that he would have then had to, if he's going to be a shepherd, he's going to have to go off and get some equipment, whatever a shepherd would use. Like, you're going to do construction, you're going to have to show up with, you know, a tool belt, you know, a hammer, you know, square, a few things, a tape measure, if you're going to show up. Get the equipment of a contractor if you're going to start. And so he would have had some. I've got written down there, bottom of page 1.4, the word equipment is the word keli in the Hebrew. It's used several times throughout the Old Testament. It can refer to equipment like a shepherd might have. It referred to jars that would hold some kind of liquid. It could refer to a variety of things. An article, like a piece of clothing, a utensil or a vessel. The things that we see that we would assume that a good shepherd, now I don't know what the equipment, he says, take the equipment once more of a foolish shepherd. So he's going to take the equipment of a shepherd a second time, because he's already taken it the first time for the good shepherd act. Now he's going to take the equipment of a foolish shepherd. I mean, okay, if a hammer and a square and a tape measure are the equipment of a good contractor, a good framer, what would the equipment of a poor framer, you know, like a bottle of beer, you know, and some drugs and, what would they bring to, you know, a video game, or, you know, a phone to sit and watch, play TikToks on or something all day at work? What would be the equipment of a foolish contractor? I mean, it doesn't say. But here is the equipment of a shepherd. Well, number one would be a bag of food. I don't have a Bible reference for that, but you'd assume they need food. A pipe or a reed for calling the sheep. Sometimes they would whistle. We hear about whistling, but sometimes they have a pipe or reed. There's an example in Judges 5:16 where the shepherds would have a pipe or a reed. A knife, a medical case or some kind of medical equipment to care for the injuries, to bind up a sheep if they got scratched, they got cut, if they broke a bone or something, to set the broken bones. And of course, two staffs, you know, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. The rod would be a club to hit the enemies or the predators, you know, the bear, the wolf, or whatever. And we see David telling stories about how he killed the lion, he killed the bear. It seems like he grabbed the bear and just struck it in the head by himself, if you read the account. And then a crook or a hook, that's, you know, the shepherd's pole, they could reach down and pull a lamb that had fallen into a hole or into a ravine or something, so they'd have two staffs. 1 Samuel 17:40 would be a sling and stone. Then you'd even have a bag for the stones. And actually, leather garments were worn by the shepherds, which is another word in Leviticus 13:49, the word K-E-L-I, this word that we call equipment right now, is a leather garment, like a leather garment that you'd wear out into. So it could be, take the equipment of a shepherd, it could simply be a leather garment. I mean, you could go as simply as a leather garment, or you could go to, you know, Home Depot and start picking up your supplies for being a good shepherd. You know, the clubs, the knife, the pipe, the bag of food, the sling, all the stuff that you'd need to go to be a good shepherd. So that would be what the good shepherd would need. The main point being, take once more the equipment of the foolish shepherd, since the role, the act, the prophecy of the good shepherd has closed. What's going to follow now is, now you're going to do an act, a play, a prophecy, a speech of the foolish shepherd. And so, again, what would the equipment of a foolish shepherd be? Well, it wouldn't be a pipe for calling the sheep, because you're not going to call them. You're not going to pay attention to them. It wouldn't be any kind of medical case, because you're not going to heal them. You would not have any of these things. It would be probably whatever would be similar to someone that you would imagine showing up at work. And I can think of stories I know and situations I know of, you're at a place of work and you go into, you know, like an evening crew, and you go into a room somewhere where the lights are off, and there's two or three of them sitting there in the dark with the glow of their cell phones, and they're charging their cell phones and they're playing games. Well, they're on the clock, but no one's there to watch them, so they're just back there playing games on their cell phone. And if you catch them, they say, well, we're charging our phones. Well, okay, if you can charge your phone at home, or if you really need to, you can plug it in and go back to work. You don't need to be playing a game. But nonetheless, that would be the equipment of a foolish employee that's not planning on working. I just bring some stuff that I'm going to. And in this case, we're going to see they're not going to be healing the sick. They're not going to be looking for the lost. They're not going to be feeding the sheep. In fact, they're going to be eating the sheep. And so I would assume they're going to have some supplies to start a fire, to roast the meat. You know, maybe they're going to have a couple knives, you know, to kind of eat, maybe a plate. It's like, so you're going out there. The good shepherd is going to be going out, have equipment, go out to ready to serve the sheep. The foolish shepherd is going to have supplies to go out and get ready to eat the sheep. And so he goes to work. It'd be like he's got a plate. He's got like some silverware. He's got a fire starter. And he's going to, it looks like you're getting to go to a barbecue. I sure am. I'm going to work. I'm going to go watch the sheep and eat. It's like, well, that's not the job of a shepherd. It's you know, he's got a little barbecue hat on and, you know, maybe pulling his grill along behind him. I mean, you can see how this could become very comical in some kind of a cartoon skit. The guy's pulling his grill with a hat on and an apron, got barbecue sauce, and starts, you know, butchering sheep. And it's like, well, that's the equipment of the foolish shepherd. You're not planning on helping anybody. So then the Lord said to me, take once more the equipment of a foolish shepherd. Again, that's assuming when he was the good shepherd, he went to Home Depot, got the good supplies to be the good shepherd. Now he's thrown those away, and he's got more supplies. This time he takes the equipment of a shepherd, but it's the foolish shepherd, and goes to work. Now, the word, the shepherd is going to be called foolish, and is going to be called worthless. In verse 14 here, the word is foolish shepherd, and we're going to talk about that. And then in verse 17, we'll mention it here again as we go through this, worthless shepherd. Those are going to be the two words. Point 2C, the shepherd who is worthless would be towards, I wrote this down, make sure I get this the way I want it to be, foolish. Yeah, the foolish would be towards God, meaning not wise, not seeking God, he's not disciplined. The worthless would be towards the sheep or the people or towards Israel, meaning he's going to be worthless. He's not going to help you at all. So the foolish shepherd is foolish in God's eyes or in God's mission. Jesus would be the wise shepherd. The worthless shepherd would be one that Israel can't count on, where Jesus would be the worthy shepherd, the one who's going to lay down his life for the sheep. So again, possibly, again, it doesn't have it explicitly in the text, but foolish could refer to his relationship towards God or God's view of him. Worthless could refer to his production with the sheep. But here we have it, foolish. The word you can see in the Hebrew up above there is E-V-I-L-E-V-I-L-I. And it looks like the word evil. It would be pronounced eveli, meaning foolish, even suggesting stupid, brutish person, who according to Proverbs 14 and 24, despises wisdom and discipline. So he is a rebel towards God. He is not interested in godliness. He is going to be stupid. He is going, and this is moral also. It's a moral deficiency. He does not have the capacity to hear God's will, to desire to execute God's will. So to put him in a position of leadership, again, we're talking about shepherds watching sheep as a metaphor. These are leaders of the people of Israel. These would be, or this would be, a political leader of Israel. That's behind the scene. So whoever this shepherd is, they are in a political leadership position, and they're over Israel. Jesus came, yes, he came as a political leader, per se, because he is the Messiah, but first, he's got to solve the problem of sin, go to the cross, lay down his life for the sheep, and then once that's taken care of and the sheep can join him in the kingdom that he's the king of, he'll then return as the political leader. But it does no good for Jesus to come the first time as the king of the kingdom of God, because there's no one in the kingdom, because no one is worthy to be in the kingdom. I mean, many people died in the Old Testament. They died in faith, but they died in faith waiting for the seed of the woman, the son of David, the redemption to be brought forth. And so if Jesus just came and accepted the crown like Satan wanted him to, you know, just worship me, I'll give you all the kingdoms right now. Well, hey, here's the kingdom of Jesus, but there's no one in it because they aren't worthy. So the good shepherd has to be worthy. He has to die for the sheep, for their sins, for the people's sin, and then he'll return as a political leader. So again, it's when we talk about Jesus being the good shepherd, he did not put himself forward as a political leader because it wasn't time. Now, the disciples wanted him to. The people wanted him to. Herod's were afraid he was going to. The Pharisees were afraid he was going to. But he wasn't. That's not his purpose. But they could see that's, well, even the prophecies. The kingdom will be on his shoulders. I mean, he will then rule and reign. So, when we talk about the foolish shepherd, this is going to be one who is a rebel, he's stupid, he's morally deficient, and he is a political leader who cannot follow God. He is going to be just the opposite. Foolish denotes a person who is morally deficient. Point two, they will not be just or righteous. The foolish shepherd cannot be just or righteous. So God is handing the people of Israel over to a shepherd who is unjust, is not righteous. They will not be able to keep the covenant. And when I write love there, that is the word in the sense of the hasid in the Old Testament. It means covenant love. We have a covenant. Again, the best example, hasid, would be a marriage relationship. We have a marriage relationship. I love my wife. I'm in love with my wife, right? Yes, I understand that. But the key is you have a contract. You have a marriage that is a covenant with each other. And so if you care about her, if you like her hair, if you don't like her hair, you are faithful to the marriage covenant. And that is what, when God says he was faithful to the covenant, it's not necessarily that he likes Israel, that they're doing exactly what he wants, but he's covenant, he's faithful to the covenant he made with Abraham, made at Sinai. Those are two different covenants. And he'll be faithful to them. Now, it gets to the place with the Mosaic covenant where they break it totally, and, you know, that's another story. But the Abrahamic covenant is, as we know, an unconditional covenant, that he will always, he'll discipline them, but always restore them. But nonetheless, that is what it is. This foolish shepherd will not be able to keep a covenant, so he will break a covenant. Now, that's important. We start identifying this as the Antichrist, because that's exactly what he's going to do. And they'll not be able to be a servant to the people in a leadership position. If they are the leader, they are going to serve themselves at the cost of the sheep. Used here, this word foolish is used here and in Isaiah 19:11. For example, This is Isaiah talking about the people of Egypt and their leadership at the time. The princes of Zoan are utterly foolish. The wisest counselors of Pharaoh give stupid counsel. How can you say to Pharaoh, I am a son of the wise, a son of the ancient kings, when you are such a foolish advisor, such a morally deficient, stupid rebel towards reality, and you say you're advising Pharaoh? And that's Isaiah ripping on the advisors and the leaders of Egypt. That's where he uses that word another time. Now, the worthless shepherd, point B, this is coming up in chapter 11, verse 17. Woe to the worthless shepherd. That is the word you can see right there, El-El, meaning insufficiency or worthlessness. This is insufficient. They're worthless. And this is used of the gods, besides God, the idols, the false gods. They are worthless. They are insufficient. You're going to call on them. You're going to count on them. You're going to listen to them. But they can't do what they say they're going to do. Their reality that they're trying to present to you doesn't match the created reality. And so to be a worthless shepherd would be to have a view, a philosophy, a plan that cannot work because that's not the way the world's put together. A true God or a good shepherd would match reality. And when they have a plan, they have advice, they have some kind of a philosophy, it's going to lead you to the green pastures. This God or this shepherd is insufficient. And once again, this word worthless could almost be translated false God, the false God shepherd, the idol shepherd, as in idol, the false shepherd. So that's all tied together in this ideal of worthless. You're trusting them, but that will not, again, you can make, I could spend, you know, and you could too, several weeks talking about this in our own culture, people that are putting forth leadership with worthless philosophies, worthless worldview, worthless religions, and it doesn't match reality. It's not going to work. Your banks are going to collapse. Your society is going to turn to crime. Your children are going to be left destitute. It's collapsing because you've got worthless leaders, worthless shepherds, which are basically insufficient idols or insufficient gods that are false. Why are you following them? The reason Israel is going to be following them is because they rejected the good shepherd, and God tells Zechariah, since they rejected the good shepherd, take the equipment of the foolish shepherd and go out there, because I'm going to raise up for them a foolish, a worthless shepherd to lead them, and he's going to lead them to their destruction. It's like, this is judgment. Now again, look to America. It's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? Well, folks, we may be under judgment. Why do we have such stupid leadership? It's judgment. It's because we've rejected the truth. We've rejected God as a society. We want to go our own way. We want to be morally deficient. We want to be stupid rebels against God's truth. Well, it's like, well, God would never do that. The Bible is, I mean, that's page after page. That's the Bible. That's the story of the Bible. The Garden of Eden. They ate from the tree God told them not to, and he says, okay. Just this one time, I'll let it go. It's like, I mean, the first thing in the Bible, don't. They did, and God didn't, like, give them another warning. It was like, well, it really doesn't matter. I'm just being particular. It's like, well, that changes everything. And now you're in the fall. And then you go through the whole Bible story. If you end up rebelling, you're going to end up paying the price. Do not be deceived. Whatever a man sows, that's what he's going to reap. So why are we like this in our nation? Well, no one knows. No, the only reason you don't know is you don't want to know. We would just rather be, here, shut the lights off. I don't know. Why is it dark? I don't know why it's dark. All the lights are off. I don't know. What happened? You shut the lights off. It's like, it's not that complicated. Okay, I start preaching there. Okay, let's go back to Bible teaching. Point B, 2B, it's used of worthless gods, idols in Leviticus and Isaiah and Psalm, different places. And so there we have it. I'll read the verse again. Then the Lord said to me, God is telling Zechariah in somewhere around 518 to act this out, preach it, teach it, act it out. take once more. You already took the equipment of the good shepherd. Now again, take on some new equipment of the foolish shepherd, the morally deficient, stupid, rebel shepherd, dressed like that. So that's what we looked at there on page one. And now we're going to go to page two. And point five there says, the next verse explains to Zechariah, next verse, chapter 11, verse 16, explains why Zechariah is to act out the part of a foolish shepherd. Why is he supposed to take the equipment of the foolish shepherd after he's just acted out the part of the good shepherd that was despised by the flock? And here is why. He says, for behold, I am raising up in the land a shepherd. There's a new shepherd coming to town. There's a new shepherd in town. And this shepherd, you can't slice or dice it any other way, this shepherd is being brought to town by the Lord. Now he brought, again, if we keep this in context, well, just what it says, he brought them the good shepherd, and they didn't want it. They despised the good shepherd. That made God mad. It's like, you despise my good shepherd? Well, I'm going to bring you a foolish shepherd, if that's what you want. And if we put it in what I think is the historical prophetic context, he brought them Jesus. They rejected him. So he's going to bring them this foolish shepherd. Now, who is this foolish shepherd? Historically, let's go to page 3, the bottom of page 3. Point 3 at the bottom of page 3. Historically, the false shepherds that appeared after Jesus and led Israel for their own advantage could include. Okay, be careful here. If I put this in historical context, it would have to be fulfilled after Jesus, like 66 to 70 AD, or the Bar Kokhba revolt. But some commentators suggest Ptolemy, which is one of the Greek leaders in Egypt, and there's several of them, but you could pick out any one you wanted, or Antiochus Epiphanes, the Greek leader of the Seleucids, the Syrian Empire. But that would be out of sync because that comes before Jesus. But again, that's just what some of them suggest. Herod the Great, which again is a suggestion, but he was a pretty great king. I mean, he was a pretty great leader. I mean, he protected the people. I don't want to go off on a whole story of Herod, but he a couple of times when famine in the land, he took and sold even the furniture in his palace a couple of times, sold it to raise money to buy food from Egypt to feed the people because he wanted to be king. And if the people die, if the people rebel, if they're hungry, he's not the king. So he ran caravans. He had a lot of money, and he would take his money and spend it on two different occasions to buy food to feed the people, just because I can't be king without people. And if the people are hungry, they're going to rebel, just feed the people. And he would rebuild it. But nonetheless, some say Herod the Great. I do not think so. Point D, Bar Kokhba, we've talked about that. That would be highly likely. That's possible. Along with anyone from 66 to 70 AD. And point E, and this I don't agree with this, but it's worth mentioning. It's only fair to mention. Some say the foolish shepherd does not represent any individual. They would say, there are some commentators say that I'm making a mistake by naming Jesus as the good shepherd, the Antichrist as the false shepherd, and trying to find a historical fulfillment of this chapter 11. You know, Rome coming in. I'm at least making a suggestion. They say, you can't even do that. It's just typical world history, and that God will at any time raise up a foolish shepherd for Israel, but all the worthless, selfish leaders of Israel would face. They would include all the worthless, selfish leaders Israel would face from the time of Zechariah until the time of the Messiah, which would probably be the time of the Messiah's establishing of his kingdom. So, meaning there's no historical fulfillment, it's just very general. Again, if you like that, go with it. I think we can get a little more specific, and we're about to go there. Okay, so go back to page 2. For I'm raising up in the land a shepherd who does not care for those who are being destroyed, or seek the young, or heal the maimed, or nourish the healthy, but devours the flesh of the fat ones, and tearing off their hooves. So if we were to write down, we got a list of 1, 2, 3, 4 sheep, 5, 6 actions, and then there's going to be a 7th one. So the sheep right here would be those, care for those being destroyed. Another word for that is the word sometimes translated lost. Nor seek the young, seek the young, and we're going to talk about all these here quickly. Seek the young, or heal the maimed here, or heal the injured, or nourish the healthy. That would basically be feed the healthy. Those that don't need saving from destruction, those that don't need seeking, and those that don't need healing or taken care of, you've got to feed the rest of them. I mean, in fact, the Hebrew, you can see it right there in the Hebrew if you look for it. It says those that are standing, the ones that are standing. Well, what are they doing? Well, that means they're grazing. They're not like lost or need to be sought or limping. They're just standing there ready to graze. So they're looking for food. Where's the food? Well, they're not even getting any food. And then the actions of this false shepherd is he eats the sheep, and then he tears off the hoofs. Now, again, we're talking about the hoofs, and I'll mention it here as we go. That could be after eating, butchering the sheep, and you're trying to get as much out of the sheep as you can. Maybe you're selling, like businesses would do that today. They're always trying how to make a little bit better profit, and they got this, you know, this extra waste over here. But hey, we could recycle that, or we could repackage that, and we could sell that as hot dogs. Oh yeah, all the meat that falls on the floor, scrape it up, put it in that grinder, wrap it up, and sell it as hot dogs. For example, I'm not, you know, making fun of hot dogs, but I eat hot dogs. That would be like, they're not worth anything. Yes, but we could maybe grind them up and make a protein drink out of them or whatever. That's one way of looking at it. The other is just that it is, some commentators, there's no explanation for this. Why would you tear off the hoofs of the sheep? There's no logical reason except just to be cruel. There's no reason for it. Is how bad it. He's not saving those that are perishing, not seeking the young, not healing the maimed, not feeding the sheep. Instead, he's eating them. In fact, he's not just eating them, he's torturing them. He's just being cruel. He's just plain cruel. And then, verse 17, he ends up deserting. Again, there I try to write the word desert. I might have wrote desert or supper dessert. I'm not sure what I wrote there. I don't know how to spell it. All right. So let's look at these right here. So there's actually this foolish shepherd in chapter 11, verse 15, or the worthless shepherd, chapter 11, verse 17, is identified with these 7 points in verse 16. Well, point 7 comes from verse 17. And so destroy. First point, number one, care for those being destroyed or those being cut off or lost. If you look up there in the Hebrew, the word for destroyed, or sometimes translated lost, is cut off. They are ones that are going to some kind of destruction. Now remember, the good shepherd says, let those who are going to be killed be killed. Let those who are going to destruction be destroyed. And let those, the rest of you, just eat each other. That's how the good shepherd leaves them. And God raises up a foolish shepherd who actually just allows all that to take place, just lets the people destroy each other, and he himself will then eat what he wants. In other words, he's more interested in himself. Again, seek the young, heal the maimed, nourish the healthy. Point two, the foolish shepherd will do none of these things, but like a corrupt leader, he will devour the flesh of the sheep. He'll not feed the sheep, but instead will feed on the sheep. One commentator made a very good point. If you wanted to take these four things right here and put them in a positive sense, these are what a good leader would do. You're going to seek the lost or save those who are somehow going to destruction. You're going to seek the young, take care of the young. And we'll talk about that word young here in just a minute. It is never used of animals. We'll see it here in a moment. It is always used of people. So very interesting. We're talking about shepherds and sheep. And the word he uses for the young is not like a word that would be lambs. It would be young, like children. So this has heavy overtone. Even in the Hebrew wording, the young is a word that is only used for people, which, of course, that's what the metaphor is about. And this would mean children. He has no concern for children. Heal the maimed. This would be someone that, if someone is hurt, injured, they're going to heal them. And then, of course, feeding them. And people would take this a great list for a pastor, church leadership. Seeking the lost or those that are going to some kind of destruction. Taking care of the children, raising them up healthy. Those that are injured or hurt or maimed in some way, you're going to help heal them, help them recover. And those who are healthy, you're going to feed them. And like what Peter, you know, feed my sheep. That Jesus says to Peter, feed. I mean, you wonder if this verse or this chapter, Jesus was the good shepherd, but he's going to heaven. He's returning to heaven. And he says to Peter, feed my sheep. In other words, take over. You've got to fill the role of the good shepherd. In fact, Peter, I could show you the verse. Peter says, as elders, we need to serve faithfully. He's talking to his elders. He says, and when the chief shepherd returns, he'll reward us for being good shepherds. So you can see Jesus taking this right here and handing this off to Peter, which would include all of these areas of good leadership. And then point three, a little more detail. What I just wrote on the board, I've got written in more detail at point three. There's four types of sheep. The lost, there's your word in the Hebrew, meaning those who are cut off or who face annihilation. The word lost is really not a good translation. It doesn't really mean they're lost, they can't find their way home. It means they're on their way to being annihilated, which could be if you're lost, you're about ready to be taken over by a bear. But the ideal here, the word means those who are about to be cut off. Those are going to be annihilated, but not directly the sheep that has lost his way, although you could play with that and make it fit. They are perishing from some situation. These should be cared for. And here's the ones that should be cared for. The young, there's your word in the text. Hanar, which is built on the word N-A-A-R, which is a word never used to describe animals, but always young humans or children. That's this word right here. N-A-A-R, and that is, again, the word for young humans or children. This is a willful neglect, in the negative sense, willful neglect of the children. So the false shepherd is not going to help those who are going to be annihilated. He don't care. He's not going to care for the children. He's going to neglect the children or heal the injured. And this is a great word because this is exactly the word healed. You can see right there. And it is found in the name Jehovah Rapha, which means the Lord heals. The Lord's ministry is healing. He is the one who heals. If it's Old Testament, if it's Jesus in the New, in the Gospels, he's going to heal. He is in the process of healing people. This false shepherd won't do it. He's not going to be interested. And, of course, feed, which is the basic responsibility of the shepherd. If I was a shepherd, about the only thing I could do is, you know, if I could even get that far, you know, get the sheep out here in the yard. There's some grass, you know, eat the grass. But you probably don't want to eat the grass in my yard. I've got so many chemicals on it, it'd probably turn the sheep green or something. With True Green coming by, pumping. I want people to walk by and go, wow, you got a nice yard. Thank you very much. Spent a lot of time and money on my yard. But the sheep can't eat it because they'd probably give them cancer. But nonetheless, that's another story. But anyway, the basic job of a shepherd is to feed the sheep. And I would hope I could do that. Because all I got to do is like stand there and watch them eat. Just get them to a place where there's green pastures, which may be harder than I think. And then the two violent acts we've already mentioned is the shepherd is killing and eating the sheep, rolling the grill out there ready to barbecue, and tearing off their hooves. And I write this, it really cannot be explained as a benefit unless you're grinding it up to make some kind of protein drink. So it can be assumed this to be senseless mutilation. Just the sheep are just being mutilated by the shepherd. It's just pointless. And then chapter 11, verse 17, woe to my worthless shepherd who deserts the flock. And that's the second one right here. And now, woe to my worthless shepherd. This is now, he's done nothing of use, nothing to benefit the sheep. He is worthless. He is like an idol. Same word. He's like a false god. He's like a false philosophy. Nothing in him matches the reality. He is false. Who deserts the flock. And in the end, after he's got what he wants, caused enough senseless torment, he's gone. And hands the flock over to whatever their fate would be. And here's the judgment. May the sword strike his arm and his right eye. So here's his judgment. We've got several words here, and I think it's fairly simple if we can break this down. You've got sword. You've got arm, you've got eye. In fact, it's the right eye. May the sword strike his arm and his right eye. May his arm be wholly withered and his right eye utterly blind. The sword would be another military. some kind of military power. His arm would be his strength, which would be probably, if it's a leader, is going to be his military. And his eye is going to be his wisdom, his insight, his ability to perceive, to plan, his strategy. Again, we already know his strategy, his wisdom is worthless. It's foolish. It's stupid. It's not lined up with reality. So a sword, some military, is going to strike his arm or his strength, his military, and is going to blind his eye. His wisdom, his insight, his strategy, which is all false, is going to be overcome by another force that's greater. Let his arm, let his strength be wholly withered, meaning it's totally useless. There's no sense of it coming back. It's gone. And his right eye utterly blind. So he's left in total darkness, can't even perceive. Now, as far as a shepherd, these would be two important things. Go back to the shepherd analogy. You need an arm to reach the sheep. You need an eye to see the sheep that you're looking for, you're trying to help, you're trying to find pastures. If you can't reach them or touch them or help them with your arm, and you can't see anything, you are indeed a... So he makes the worthless shepherd worthless. That is, you know, if you continue the metaphor. Now, point four. Boy, what time is it getting to be here? Because now we come to some verses, and we'll start by going to... Yeah, go to Ezekiel 34, and then I'm going to shoot through some verses. And in context, this is not like the first time the shepherd analogy has come up. Obviously, Psalm 23, there's the Lord is my shepherd. You know, there you go, right down the line. But in Ezekiel 34, I'll read part of this. I mean, this is going to take some time to read. You know, there's 31 verses here. But Ezekiel would have been written during this time period right in here, like 597 to 586. He's writing during that time period there. In fact, Ezekiel was taken to Babylon in the 597 captivity. So that's when he goes. In fact, his name is maybe written on there, Ezekiel, yeah, right there. So Ezekiel's from that. We're at say, 518, 618. So 597 to 518, you see how close this is. I mean, we're in the same century. This would be like, you know, the 1920s. This would be like, you know, the 1980s, 1990s. It's close enough. And again, I could do the math, 20 minus, yeah, 70 years. Okay. So, I mean, they're in the same generation, not generation, just one generation apart, same century. Ezekiel was taken into captivity. Zechariah came out of captivity. Ezekiel wrote in captivity where Zechariah came out of. So, it's very easy that they would be familiar with this. Chapter 34, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me, to Ezekiel. Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Now, this would be, let me see if I got some kind of a date on this. Ezekiel's great at dating it. I've got in verse 30, chapter 32, I've got March 3rd, 385. Now, I'm not sure if that relates to this chapter right here, but he's always dating his thing. So this would maybe continue. So it'd be 585 would be close. And even though the month and the day. Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. So this would be the shepherds that had been overrun by Nebuchadnezzar that were persecuting Jeremiah. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Now, if you want to, you can hear Ezekiel's words to the fourth generation as they're collapsing in Jerusalem in 586. And allow those words to kind of penetrate and shine some light into your culture right now and see if it matches anything you may know of. Who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourself with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not take care of the flock. What I'd say, the middle class. You have not strengthened the weak or helped the sick or bound up the injured. Oh, why, yes, we did. We've given all kinds of money away, and we're letting all the refugees come into our country. It's like, right, the money you're giving away is from the middle class, and they're in infiltrating the middle class, driving the whole nation into poverty. But yet, you're on some kind of global scale making plans. Okay, I don't want to preach this. You have not brought back the strays or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally, so that they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered over all the mountains and on every hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, Yahweh, because my flock lacks a shepherd, and so has been plundered and has become food for all the wild animals, and because my shepherds did not search for my flock but cared for themselves rather than my flock, therefore, O shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. I am against the shepherds and will hold them accountable for my flock. I will remove them from tending the flock so that the shepherds can no longer feed themselves. I will rescue my flock from their mouths and will no longer be food for them. For this is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep. And goes all the way on into verse chapter 35. So that is talking about the sheep. Turn on the notes to page 4. And we're going to just shoot through some things. If we think, I think this false shepherd, the foolish, worthless shepherd, is a type of the Antichrist. The first, on page 4, point E, the first verse I'm going to point out to defend this position, not that it's right, but this is what I think. I think this is a prophecy. I think Zechariah 11, 15 through 17 is talking about the coming of the Antichrist, who's going to do the very things. Not that it can't be fulfilled. Ezekiel just talked about false shepherds back here before the time of Zechariah. We know there's going to be false shepherds that are going to come if they be the false priests that come through Israel, if it be the Roman revolt, if it be Bar Kokhba. But in John 5:43, without going into the context, Jesus says this. The people are rejecting Jesus in John chapter 5. And Jesus says, I have come in my Father's name, and you do not receive me. When he says, I've come in my Father's name, he comes with the Old Testament prophecies. He comes with John the Baptist's baptism and the voice from heaven. He comes with the signs and the miracles. He comes with his own demonstration, him teaching the word. So, and he comes in his Father's name. And you do not receive me. What else do you want? It's written about him in the scriptures. If another comes in his own name, you will receive him. So right there, I have come the good shepherd in my Father's name to take care of the flock marked for slaughter. That's chapter 11. But you've rejected me. So I hand you over to your fate, because you will receive one who comes in his own name. And when he comes in his own name, you'll say, aha, we'll sign a contract with you. We'll follow you. And he's going to be this worthless shepherd that has to be destroyed by a powerful military that's going to strike his strength and his wisdom and leave it utterly useless. So that's, again, that's Jesus. Going back up to point B, Daniel chapter 7. As for the 10 horns out of this kingdom, 10 kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the former ones. This is the little horn. And shall put down 3 kings. He shall speak words against the Most High, his own arrogance, his own false philosophy, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, persecute the saints, and shall think to change the times and the law. He's going to have his own philosophy. The changing times and laws, probably changing gender too. And they shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. And that would be the 3.5 years. But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed to the end. Daniel 9:27, also referred to in Matthew 24. And he shall make a strong covenant with many, the Antichrist, the false, foolish shepherd, with many for 1 week, 7 years. And for half the week he shall put an end to sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of the abominations shall come one who makes desolate until the decree end is poured out on the desolator. So he's going to make a covenant for 7 years, but after 3.5 years, he breaks the covenant and moves in his own image. Dan 11, 34, 39. When they stumble, they shall receive a little help. This would be possibly the Maccabees. And many shall join themselves to them with flattery as they become the ruling class, the Hasmoneans. And some of the wise shall stumble, and that they may be refined, purified, and made white. The whole Maccabean revolt, the Hasmonean period, was to purify some people until the time of the end, for it still awaits the appointed time. And the king shall do as he wills. This is the Antichrist, because up till that time it was Antiochus Epiphanes. I can show you in the text, but all of a sudden, the appointed time, that ends. Antiochus Epiphanes dies, and it continues to talk about the king, or in our case, the foolish shepherd, shall do as he wills. He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak astonishing things against the God of gods. He shall prosper till the indignation is accomplished, for what is decreed shall be done. I'm going to give you the false shepherd, the foolish shepherd. He shall pay no attention to the gods of his fathers or to the one beloved by women. He shall pay no attention to any other god, for he shall magnify himself above all. He shall honor the god of fortress instead of these. A god whom his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, which is interesting. What is this god his fathers did not know? With precious stones and costly gifts. He shall deal with the strongest fortresses with the help of a foreign god, probably means a demonic force or a new god that is revealed from the ruling class of the rulers and authorities in heavenly places. Those who acknowledge him, he shall load with honor. He shall make them rulers over many and shall divide the land for price. When it says divide the land for price, that land is Israel that he has got a contract with, a covenant with. He'll start handing out the land and he'll desert the people. 2 Thessalonians 2:1-12. Again, they were talking about this part right here, where a sword will strike him down. Now, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, 2 Thessalonians 2:1, and our being gathered together to him. So the coming of the Lord and our being gathered to him. We ask you, brothers, not to be quickly shaken in mind or alarmed either by a spirit or a spoken word or letter seeming to be from us, meaning some kind of prophecy, some kind of a false letter that they say Paul sent them from us, to the effect that the day of the Lord has come. In other words, we're already in the great tribulation. You've already missed out on the Lord's coming. He said, let no one deceive you in any way, for that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called god or object of worship. Now, when is he revealed? Some would say at the beginning of the tribulation. Some would say at the midway point when he reveals himself. He breaks the covenant, sets his image up. At first, he appears to be a peaceful guy, a good shepherd. The Jews sign a treaty with him. Halfway through, he breaks the covenant and reveals himself, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, kind of identifying that midway point, proclaiming himself to be God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? In other words, he's not telling him anything new. He's reviewing the notes. And you know what is restraining him now, so that he may be revealed in his time. He's being held back. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. It's already happening. It's just being held back from hitting this final cycle. Only he who now restrains it will do so until he is out of the way. Whoever that is, if it be Jesus, an angel, Michael, whatever, the Spirit of God, the church, fill in the blank. And then, when whoever is holding it back is removed, then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will kill with the breath of his mouth and bring to nothing by the appearance of his coming. That's this right here. He'll strike him and bring him to nothing. There'll be nothing. He'll be totally withered. The coming of the lawless one is by the activity of Satan with all power and false signs and wonders and with all wicked deception for those who are perishing because they refuse to love the truth and so be saved. So those who refuse the truth, refuse the good shepherd, God says, I'm going to send you the delusion. I'm going to send you this Antichrist. He's going to have the power of Satan to lead you where you don't want to go, but you think you do. And at the right time, God's going to destroy them. Therefore, God sends them a strong delusion so they may believe what is false. Chapter 13 of Revelation. Now, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our being gathered to him, we ask you, brothers, I cut and pasted, but I cut and pasted the same thing. I did not pick it up where I was supposed to. And that's just the coming of the Antichrist coming, chapter 13 of Revelation. We can drop down to point 6, Revelation 19, 19 through 21. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth with their armies. So the beast is the Antichrist. The kings of the earth would be all the other leaders, gathered to make war against him who was sitting on the horse and against his army. So this Antichrist, this false shepherd, with all the armies of the world. Now they come to fight him. You've got the king of the east, the king of the north. You've got the Antichrist. They're all coming together to fight against each other. But they realize they've got a bigger enemy, and that is the Lord, who is coming in the atmosphere. And they all gather to fight him. And the beast was captured. This is the foolish, worthless shepherd. And with it, the false prophet, who in its presence had done the signs by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur. And then chapter 20, verse 10, the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet were, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. And that is, if we're talking about the Antichrist in chapter 15 through 17, that is his eye and his arm being totally withered, totally destroyed by a sword, which would be the sword of the Lord. We end right here, page 5. Point 8 and 9, just simply Jesus in John chapter 10. Jesus claiming in his ministry to be the good shepherd. He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The good shepherd does not eat the sheep and then tear off their hooves. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep, and in Jesus' case, so he can then return and set up his kingdom with the sheep being citizens of his kingdom. And in that same chapter, Jesus says this of the Father. He says, second time he says it in this chapter, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, meaning I know my own sheep, and my own sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. So that is how that ends chapter 11 of Zechariah. You have the introduction of a foolish, worthless shepherd. If that's just general worthless leadership in Israel throughout time, if that's some specific, if it's the Roman revolt, Roman wars, if it's the Bar Kokhba revolt, if it's the Antichrist, you know, whatever. We can see how it fits in different places. But he will be judged. Any false leadership will be judged. I mean, if it's a particular individual, that will take place. But I assume God is going to take care of false leaders, worthless shepherds, in their time. Again, God's established, God put him in power, but when the time is ready, he will be utterly left worthless and powerless. Now, chapter 12 picks up another prophecy. So we've got 12, 13, and 14 from Zechariah yet to look at, and it's going to definitely take us up to the final days, and we're just a matter of where these things fit in. So we got a lot of prophecy yet to look at that kind of actually helps build the foundation for eschatology when you start reading in the New Testament. I'll pray, and we're free to go. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into your word. We thank you for the scriptures. We do ask that we would judge our own hearts, that any kind of leadership position that we have or where people are trusting and counting on us, that we would be the people you've called us to be, that we would take care of the sheep, that we would help deliver those who are suffering, but Father, that we would also simply feed the sheep and keep them strong and not just serve our own selves. Again, we thank you for this opportunity to serve you at this time, and ask that we might be found faithful doing your work. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.